brother and sister W.N. Short began doing mission work in the African nation of Zambia in 1922. During that time, they led many, many people to Christ, started countless congregations in that country. But some 50 years later, in the early 70s, the political climate changed in that country. It became very, very dangerous to live. It became a very dangerous place to be a Christian. Many Christians went into hiding. Others began or stopped worshiping with the Christians regularly. Congregations closed. And finally, Brother and Sister Short ended up having to move. Someone came up to them and said, "Are you sad that after all of these years of work, your work has been, if not stopped, at least hindered?" And Brother Short said, "No, we did what we could. We planted the seeds, and who knows what the Lord will do with it." Tonight we begin a study of Joshua. As I look at Joshua, I see Joshua as a man who revived a dream. This year we're focusing on revival, renewal, looking at what we can do to go beyond what we've ever done before. As we think about anything God has accomplished in us, we will never be satisfied, but we will begin to think more and more about what more could God do through my life if I will but let Him. And I hope as we march through this year, we will put feet on the prayers that we prayed this last week. I hope that we will not only have an attitude of continually going to God and asking for His strength and power and guidance, but then we will go to work to make it happen by His power, His grace, and His glory. I think it's fitting that our young folks and lads to leaders are looking at the book of Joshua. And so on Sunday nights, we're going to be looking at that book because that book is really about revival. It's about the revival of a nation. It's about the renewal and the revival of a dream. And as we introduce that book tonight, I want us to focus on the man the book focuses on. And I want us to think about the events that lead up to the events found in this powerful, powerful Old Testament book. We're going to use the letter P as our memory glue. We're going to focus especially on the promise. We're going to not only talk about the promise, but then we're going to talk about the preparation, the pattern, and the point. So think about the promise. If you've got your Bibles handy, or you can look on the screen, look at Genesis chapter 12. In Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 through 3, God makes a promise to Abraham. The whole rest of the Bible hinges on this promise. If you go to Genesis chapter 11, humanity had hit a low point. Human beings had completely reversed the plan God had for the creation. They had turned against God. They, instead of glorifying God and bringing honor to Him, instead of scattering and filling the earth as God commanded in Genesis 1 and 2, instead they had stayed together. They had built a great tower, not to bring honor and glory to God, but to bring glory to themselves. And so God scattered those who would not scatter. He confused their languages and sent them to spread out on the face of the earth. But even as those people scattered out, even as those people reversed God's plan moved onward. And God made a promise. In Genesis chapter 12, He says, "The Lord said to Abram," He says, "go forth from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house to a land that I will show you. And I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great, so that you shall be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you, and the one who curses you I will curse, and in you all families of the earth will be blessed." God makes three components to that promise. He tells Abram, "Your descendants are going to be a great nation. And through one of your descendants, I'm going to bless the whole earth. You are going to be a blessing." But also a component of that promise was a promise that this great nation would have a land of their own. He says, I want you to leave what you've known. I want you to leave your family or much of your family and go to a land that someday I'm going to give to your descendants. And so he planted a dream in the mind of a man named Abram, who we came to know as Abraham. If we continue on through the story of the promise and what happened to the promise, Abram went into the land of Canaan. Abram had children, had sons, Ishmael and Isaac, and God's promise would go through that son, Isaac. Isaac would then have sons, Jacob and Esau, and the promise would go through that son, Jacob. Jacob would then have 12 sons, and one in particular would stand out among those sons, a boy named Joseph. Joseph began to see dreams and visions, and in those visions he saw that he would be a leader of his family, a leader over his brothers, even a leader over his parents. His brothers resented it, and so his brothers sold him into slavery. And he was sent down to Egypt. But there in Egypt, he served his father, the God of Israel. He served God even when he was a slave in Potiphar's household. He served God even when he was in a prison. And because he served God, God lifted him up and made him second ruler of all Egypt. Eventually, when a famine was found in the land, Joseph's father and his family came to Egypt to live with him. And God worked through Joseph to provide for the descendants of Abram. In other words, God had made a promise to Abram, but that promise could not be fulfilled if the family dies. So God worked through the slavery and imprisonment of Joseph to make sure that they had a kinsperson in control of the food in Egypt so that when a famine came that could wipe out the whole family, God had a man in place who would save that family. But the problems did not end. Eventually, a new Pharaoh rose to lead over Egypt, a Pharaoh who didn't know Joseph, didn't know his family, a Pharaoh who was threatened by the growing family, the descendants of Abraham. And so he enslaved them. And for some 400 years, the descendants of Abraham were slaves in Egypt. And I want you to think about it. At this point in the story, it seems as if the dream is lost. They were going to be a powerful nation. Well, they're a nation of slaves. They were going to have a land of their own, but now they're captives in a foreign land. It seemed that the dream was a long, long way away. But the promise moved on. And God sent a man named Moses to lead Israel up out of Egypt. And Moses led them to the land of Canaan. When they departed from Egypt, the sea had parted before them. They had journeyed out across the desert. They had stopped at Mount Sinai, and God had visited them, had made a covenant with them, had given them guidelines to guide them in their relationship with the one true God. And then they stood on the brink of the promised land, ready to go in and accept the promise. The dream was right at their fingertips. Moses sent 12 spies into the land to search it out, the land God had promised to them. When they came back, you know the story. 10 spies gave a negative report. 2 spies gave a good report, said, let's trust in God. The people listened to the 10 instead of the 2, and they spent some 40 years wandering in the wilderness until everyone above the age of 20 had died. Along the way, even Moses, the great leader of God, disobeyed God, and he too was forbidden to go into the promised land. And then he too died. It seemed as if the dream was lost again. I want you to see that every time it seems there's hope, they do something to take themselves back into despair. And so you've got a generation, their parents are gone, their grandparents are gone, their great leader Moses is gone. The dream is wavering on the edge of a knife. What will happen to this great promise? What did those young people who were living there in the wilderness, who had watched the mistakes of their parents, what were they thinking? Did they think it would ever be a reality? Did they think that they would ever go into the promised land? Did they ever think the dream would come true? But then in Deuteronomy chapter 31 and verse 23 it says, God appointed Joshua to take the place of Moses. Verse 23 says, Then he commissioned Joshua the son of Nun and said, Be strong and courageous. You shall bring the sons of Israel into the land which I swore to them, and I will be with you. He says, No matter what has happened, I made a promise to Abraham, and I'll keep that promise. And a whole generation has been lost in the desert. And Moses is buried on the top of a mountain and nobody knows where he's buried. But the dream is not buried. The dream is not dead. And Joshua, you are going to be the man. You are going to be the one to lead the children of Israel into the fulfillment of the dream. That's the promise. The book of Joshua is about the fulfillment of that promise. That so many times it seemed as if it could not be a reality. Joshua shows the dream coming true. Now before we talk a little more about Joshua, I want us to talk about the preparation of Joshua. The first mention of the man Joshua in the text of the Bible is found in Exodus chapter 17 and verse 9 when the children of Israel were going to war against the Amalekites. He just kind of comes out of nowhere. All of a sudden there's this man named Moses and he is going to lead the people into a great victory, their first battle victory as a nation set free from Egypt. Who is this man Joshua? And we don't have a lot said about Joshua prior to this. In fact, this is the first reference. But there's some things that we can know about him from the story we just described and from passages found elsewhere in the Bible. Joshua is the son of a man named Nun. And Joshua was born a slave. When he came into the world, that's all he knew. That's all his daddy knew. That's all his grandfather knew. That's all they had known for generations was slavery. From his earliest childhood, his greatest aspiration he could imagine was just to be a slave. I want you to think about what was for him as a young boy growing up. I want you to think about what it was like for the nation as a whole. In fact, Exodus begins with the nation crying out to God to help them. They were a nation in despair. They were a nation without hope. They were a nation that didn't dare to dream. And yet God took this little slave boy and made a dream come true. His name was Hoshea growing up. The name means salvation. Hoshea saw a man named Moses come to Egypt. Hoshea saw 10 plagues. In fact, Hoshea was saved from one of them. Most believe that he was the oldest boy in his family. So what was the 10th plague all about? It was the death of the firstborn. He had personally, not just nationally, as God delivered the whole nation from the plagues, he personally had been delivered by the power of God from death and the power of those plagues. He had watched Moses part the Red Sea. He had journeyed across the wilderness and had watched Moses serve as a leader. And the text tells us that he became an attendant, a servant, a worker with Moses as a young man. So likely was a young man when he journeyed out of Egypt. And very early on, he was attached to Moses. And so God was preparing him as he spent time with this great mentor that we know as Moses. When they fall against the Amalekites, Joshua is the one that Moses chose to lead them in that great victory. In Exodus chapter 24, it's interesting, God through Moses told the leaders of the children of Israel not to set foot on the top of the mountain. But Joshua was invited to go much of the way with Moses. It tells us much about what both God and Moses thought about Joshua. In Exodus chapter 33, after the events of the golden calf, a temporary tent was set up. And if you read the events of that chapter, it seems that Joshua, in some way, almost stood as a guard or a sentry at that tent. The text talks about Moses going to speak to God at the tent, the cloud which represented the presence of God coming down over the tent, the people rejoicing that God would still speak to them. And that was important because they had just sinned against God by building a golden calf. And so they rejoiced because God still spoke to Moses and there was still hope for them. The text says then Moses would leave and go back to his tent. But guess who stayed behind in the presence of the Lord? It was Joshua. Joshua was chosen in Numbers 14 to be among those spies that would go into the promised land. And it was only Caleb and Joshua who came back with a good report. If you look in Numbers chapter 14, verses 6 and following, the people rejected the testimony of the two spies who said, "We can do it." The 10 says, "This is a great and powerful people in this land. We cannot gain victory. We'll be destroyed." But Caleb and Joshua said, "No. If God delights in us, He'll give us the victory. We must put our trust in God." And the people not only rejected them, but the text says, I think around verse 10, that the people took up stones to stone them. I want you to think about that. Joshua was so faithful to God that he was willing to do the right thing, even if it meant being stoned to death. If we look over in Numbers chapter 14, starting in verse 30, and then you can look at verses 36 through 38 there on your screen. God then actually struck with a plague the 10 spies who said they couldn't take the promised land. And He told the rest of the adults above the age 20, "You're going to die in the wilderness." But the exceptions were Caleb and Joshua. And then Numbers 27, verses 18 and following, God says that Joshua is going to take Moses' place. It seems, according to this reading and at least one other reading, that the Spirit of God resided in Joshua. And that Moses was to lay hands on Joshua, something like we see the apostles doing in the New Testament, and give him wisdom and power as well. In verse 20, "You shall put some of your authority on him in order that all the congregation of the sons of Israel may obey him." And then in verse 23, "Then he laid his hands on him and commissioned him just as the Lord had spoken through Moses." Do you see what's happening? God is not only fulfilling a promise, but God along the way is preparing and training a young slave boy to be an instrument through whom the promise, the dream, would become a reality. And as you talk about the pattern of the book of Joshua and just what's going on in the book of Joshua, the book of Joshua is about God working through a young man named Joshua to make that dream come true. The rabbis from the days before Christ attribute most of this book to Joshua and Eleazar, the priest who would have served with him. Some think that Samuel may have had a hand in it. There are obviously some sections in there that are written by someone other than Joshua. For example, if we look back in the book of Deuteronomy, you've got sections there that are obviously not written by Moses at the very end because it describes his death. At the end of Joshua, we got a description of his death. And so somebody else would have written that down after his passing. But I tend to believe that most of the information in Joshua was written down by Joshua himself. But as we look at the book of Joshua, really, verse 1 through about verse 12 of chapter 5 is about the children of Israel making preparations to go into the promised land. Starting with about chapter 5, verse 13 through chapter 12, you have the people actually taking possession of the land. Then you have a section in which they partition the land. They divide up the land among the tribes. And then finally, in the last few chapters, you have what some might call the praise section, where they renewed their covenant commitment to God, where Joshua calls the people to serve the Lord, where he is going to say, "Me and my house will serve the Lord," and you've got to make the same decision in your own lives. We've just tried to give a quick introduction to this book tonight, but let's just talk about you know, what's the point, at least this far? What are some things that we can learn from just the few things we highlighted in the last few moments? First of all, I want you to think about the title. I want you to think about his name. He grew up as Hoshea, a name that meant salvation. But eventually Moses renamed him, and this is a fairly common practice in both the Old Testament and the New Testament. You can think about Jesus did that with Simon. He nicknamed him Peter, the Rock. Well, Moses gave a name to Hoshea. He gave him the name Joshua, and it's significant. Because Hoshea means salvation. Joshua means salvation is of the Lord, or God is salvation. Basically, it attaches the name of the Lord, it attaches God to His name. Now, that's very common in latter Hebrew history. If you read through the rest of the Old Testament, you're going to find the name of God in all kinds of names, like the name Elijah. And you're going to find prophets and kings and all kinds of folks who have names, who are prophets, kings, and leaders who have God in their names. But it just really doesn't happen much up to Joshua. Moses is setting a new trend. He wants the people to not only be free from slavery, but he wants them to see that they're God's people. And that salvation doesn't come from Moses, and salvation doesn't come from Joshua, but salvation comes from God. And it's interesting that many years later there would be a child born in a place called Bethlehem who would grow up in a village called Nazareth. And you know what his mom and dad called him? They called him Joshua. We call him Jesus. That comes to us from the Greek. But his Hebrew name was Joshua. He was the embodiment of salvation coming from the Lord. I not only want us to think about the title, I want us to think about the time. I want you to think about all those years that God was preparing and training and getting Joshua ready. There were many times along the way that it looked like the dream would never happen. There were times in the life of Joseph that you would have thought there's no way, in the life of Joshua, that he is ever going to lead 2 million people into the promised land. We think in terms of what he became. We think of him in terms of the man who led them against Jericho or led them against the Amalekite. We think him in terms of the one who went with Moses on the top of Mount Sinai. We fail to realize that once upon a time he was a slave, he was a young boy, and God invested in him, and Moses invested in him, and made him the man God wanted him to be. There will be times in our lives when it looks hopeless. There will be times in our lives, there are times right now when you may be thinking, I don't know where in the world we're going to get the money to pay this bill, this bill, this bill, and this bill. I don't know how we're going to get out of this problem and this struggle. It may seem like the world is falling down around you. The story of the Old Testament is a story that reminds us that at those times when it seems like it's hopeless and the night is dark as can be and there cannot be a ray of light, God is still at work. God is still working on His plan. And God is working on preparing us for great things to come. And right now you may feel like in your life, you know, there's not much I can do for God. Well, Joshua may have said that. But he just kept on giving his life to God. He kept submitting his will to God's will. And so God just kept on shaping him and molding him. God only knows the great things that can be done in your life and in my life in the days to come if we'll just give our hearts and lives up to His preparation. What is God preparing you to do? And what is God preparing us to do? Because I believe God is not only working in us as individuals, He's working in the Graymere congregation. And he does not have in mind a status quo Christianity in which we say, hey, we've done some good things in the last 50 plus years. Let's just hang on to the ship, not mess anything up. Status quo was never God's way of doing things. God has always had a greater dream. And God has always been preparing His people to do more magnificent things in the future, not by their own power, but by His. Let us keep on dreaming and keep on letting Him work in our lives to prepare us over time to be what He wants us to be. Really, at its heart, this story is about trust. It's about whether I'll trust God when I'm going through the training. It's about whether I'll trust God when the night is dark and trust that someday we will cross the Jordan River and the walls of Jericho will come down. Will you take out your songbooks and turn to the hymn of encouragement? As you turn there, I think back to Brother and Sister Shore, who basically were run out of town in the early 70s when things seemed bleak for the cause of Christ. I found out that some 15 years later, after Brother and Sister Short had been dead several years, an article came out in the Christian Chronicle talking at that time about the status of the Lord's church in the nation of Zambia. And it said at that time, after all the political unrest, after all the congregations that had closed their doors, after all the Christians that had left the faith and gone into hiding, after missionaries that had to leave the countries and others had passed away, there were still over 400 congregations and over 20,000 Christians. And they estimated that over 100 congregations had been started in the previous 8 years. There will be times in life when it looks like the dreams that we had for ourselves or those dreams that we thought God had for us cannot come true. But I think if we'll have the attitude of Brother and Sister Short, I will do my part. I will plant my seed, and who knows what God will do with it. That's what Joshua did when he was a slave. That's what Joshua did when he was with Moses walking through the Red Sea. That's what he did in those 40 years in the wilderness. That's what he did when he was sent as a spy. That's what he did when God called on him to be a leader. I want to challenge each of us. Do we really live our lives trusting God? Or is it only something we mouth when times are good and things are okay and the bank account is full? God is at work in us, even at those times when we cannot fathom that anything good is going on. God does not rest. God does not sleep. He's just looking for some Joshuas who will have the courage and the strength to let Him shape them into His image. If we can help you in your walk with God tonight, if you've never become a child of God, if you've never expressed your faith and repentance, confession and baptism, if you're a Christian and you realize that you've gone astray and you need the prayers of the church, you just need encouragement, hugs, whatever it is you need, have the courage to come, because God still works in people's lives just like He did in Joshua's. Won't you come as we stand and sing?